Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Dawson, back to throw, heads for the end zone, throws one to Curtis McPherson, the fullback complete, and the touchdown.
That is what you call play action, Jack, and this is what Kansas City likes to do inside the 10-yard line.
It's hard to get to him, right? But, so, do you bring Eli? Could do that. You bring Nick Foles, maybe.
Cheap shot.
Hey, Tom, it's Chuck. If you hit the green, I'm going to give $25,000 out of my own pocket. I should have just said if you can just keep it on the planet.
These aren't the Falcons you're playing against. Tigers are a pretty good closer.
Same colors, though. It's the Eagles that I cringe, bro, not the Falcons.
Go in! Yeah! Oh, my goodness!
Oh, you made it!
Shut your mouth, Chuck. Take a little of that medicine. Get your butt out of here.
Tiger
Great
Woods,
good match.
Peyton Manning, the winners of Capital One's The Match.
And now, amazed at how quickly this week is going by, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on a Tuesday as we make our way through a busy time. Sports getting ready to load back up. The NBA zeroing in on what their plan is going to be. Baseball, a big week. We'll hear from Jeff Passan a little bit later on. A big week for Major League Baseball to get some things figured out, hopefully, and get on the course to playing. And, of course, we have NASCAR and Bundesliga. Going, have you picked a team, Curtis? Have you picked a Bundesliga team yet?
I haven't yet. I don't want to pick. I mean, you've already got the second best team. I don't want to pick the best team. I'm trying to find something that, just from the name or the background, that I might find interesting. There's one that has like 1090, or one has a number in it. That sounds interesting. I'm been going over the teams and trying to find one to pick. I will have one picked by the end of today.
Are you talking about 1899 Hoffenheim?
Yeah, yes. Like that. I like the 1899 Hoff something.
There's also FC Schalke 04.
That might sense.
And FSV Mainz 05. So if you're wanting numbers. There's one that's just one FC Köln.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like Mönchengladbach.
Curtis. Obviously did not do as much research when he's like, there's one with a number in it. Seren's like, there are about eight there, guy.
Well, the 1899 is the one I was thinking of. It has had a year. It's like a year in it. Here's one that I thought was interesting. Mönchengladbach. That just sounds like a team that didn't take any crap, man.
Yeah.
Borussia Mönchengladbach. That might be my side.
Well, the dreams of Dortmund came crashing down earlier today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 1-0 loss to Bayern. It was a big one. A little chippy, little chip shot over the keeper. Caught him off his line a little too far and got the chip shot in there. So very frustrating for us Dortmund fans. I was telling our buddy Joe Spiker at Easton Roofing. We were talking about it. I was asking him earlier because I didn't see a TV network listed for it. I think it's because this was, midweek game probably wasn't normally going to be played. And he texted me this morning, okay, it's going to be on FS1. I'm like, great, I'm fired up. It's literally the biggest Bundesliga game of my life. And it was.
Yes.
It was. It's only the second or third, I guess, Bundesliga match of my life that I've like had a rooting interest in. But it was the biggest one, and we crapped the bed. So, pisser for me, Pisser for me.
Of all the Bundesliga games, this was definitely one. Matches, this was definitely one of them.
This was a big one.
The big
it
one.
Was a big one. Joe and I were texting back and forth. This blonde cat, who I guess is really, really good, but seemed to be just – well, first of all, there was a handball that wasn't called. The guy definitely – to the best of Joe, he definitely stuck his elbow out. I don't know about that, but it definitely hit his arm, and there was no call. Should have been a PK. But this blonde cat, who I Joe sent me over. Here's some videos of him. He's really good. He's 19. Like, yeah, well, he's not finishing today, right? So let's go. I need to see more out of this kid. But it's fun. I've read the history of the team, at least the Wikipedia history of the club and how it came about and how it grew up. And so, you know, interesting. And, you know, one of the things they did today that I think is something to watch for as we start up more sports here in America, in this match, you know, the first one I watched, and maybe I missed the second one, probably slept in or something, but the first one was, like, just totally empty. Right, so you could hear everything that was being said by every player and every coach. Not necessarily that you could make it out, particularly since most of it was in, you know, German and everything, but you could hear the voices and everything. This time, they piped in. They basically played, like, old crowd sound. And so, you know, you had the chanting and all that kind of stuff that was going on. But what I really liked was whenever there was a call that went against Dortmund, all the whistles. You know, which is the European form of booing.
Yeah, right.
You know, any call when it gets Dortmund, tweet, tweet, you know, all the whistle. I was like, oh, that's great. You know, that's great. Because, you know, every home crowd, any call that goes against the home team is just crap.
Yes. Yeah.
No home team has ever committed a foul, a penalty, anything like that. So, you know, it was great. I just enjoyed, you know, thinking that somebody was up in the booth with the sound effects and had his finger on a button ready to go for any call that went against Dortmund. And then it would be all boo. Like, think of Arrowhead's empty, you know, and you're going to hear all the music. And then, you know, they get a false start on Eric Fisher and it's going to be boo.
Just have pipes, just record, you know, guys hurling, you know, insults or maybe a couple things that are off color, just kind of mix them in there a little bit, just underneath. So people kind of get a flavor of it. It's not quite audible. Yeah, I like that idea.
Wouldn't that be great if CBS had to go to the, like, you know, the 5 seconds of mute because they're piping in profanities? You know, we've got recorded profanities down. They've got the field mic and they're still, you know, piping stuff in.
Those would not be difficult to find from a regular game, even in the club section.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, we've got a lot coming your way today. Nate Taylor from The Athletic will be with us talking some football, some Chiefs football in the 3 o'clock hour. Mike Axissa from CBS Sports talking some baseball as there are some plans, you know, for the baseball. They've got some things that they want to do. And so we'll talk about baseball and some of the different things that are being talked about with Major League Baseball and getting things going on that front. So, you know, one of the big things that I want to hit upon is the expansion in Major League Baseball, why the coronavirus shutdown could lead to Major League Baseball expansion in the near future, which I'd actually be for the expansion. So we'll talk about that. You know, we've discussed it many times. I think we need more teams. I'm all for more teams. I was like, whoa, you don't want to water down. Why? Why don't we want it watered down? Like, tell me, what is watered down? Let me just ask you this. What does watered down baseball look like?
Yeah.
Well, there's not enough pitching. Oh, you mean so we get a lot of offense? Isn't that what everybody wants already? So why are we fretting over watering down pitching in baseball? What if we added 8 NFL teams, what are we afraid of?
Yeah, it's going to make maybe some of the best players better. I mean, a lot of times, yes, when you've seen records occur, they've occurred in expansion seasons. But the overall quality of play isn't necessarily any worse. I mean, I don't remember thinking the 95 NFL season was boring because they popped in a couple of teams, or I don't remember. I've never remembered a season where they put a number of teams in and the overall play was any less exciting.
No, I never, like, well, it's just, it literally is the fear of the unknown.
Yes.
Right. That's like, no, because I don't know what it would mean. Well, so if you don't know, it might be better. No, it's gotta be worse. Cause I know this over here. And if I don't know it, it must be worse. It's gotta suck.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. Right. That's not how it actually always works. But anyway, so we'll get into that with Mike Xisa, from CBS Sports. We'll get you some need-to-knows. And Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports going to join us. We've got all the networks, Athletic, CBS, NBC, coming your way here today. Kurt Heelan, of course, NBA writer, and the NBA does seem to be getting very close to putting out their plan down in Orlando. And so, yeah, looking forward to hearing what he thinks about how it's all going to work. And we'll also talk a little bit about the draft, where that's going, you know, just an update on the NBA as they seem to be the one moving the quickest towards getting everything, getting green-lighted and getting everything going. It looks like everybody's targeting July. We may go from nothingness to, like, everything all in July. NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball, you know, all firing up on the same weekend. How would that be?
It would be pretty damn wild and quite enjoyable. I mean, it's got yeah, almost gotten to the point where I'm gonna say I've forgotten what it's like to watch games, but it's, you know, for the first month, there was that, gosh, I miss those games. Now it's been long enough now that I'm kind of like, I do miss them, but I haven't really thought about them because the mind has almost been erased of what that was like.
I think it's going to be amazing if you get all those sports going and then yep, you get college football coming right behind it. And, you know, we're still playing NBA finals when college football goes.
It will be the greatest month, sports month ever.
Yeah. I mean, it really could be. Like, it could be like, I don't know what to watch. I've got NBA finals game two over here. I've got, you know, whatever the best interconference, you know, non-con college football game is over here. I mean, literally, we'll see how far the NBA is going to go. But you could have NFL, college football, NBA, NHL, NBA and NHL finals all going on at once.
Yeah, for the first time ever.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be wild. Let's hope it is. Let's hope it. Plus, like, and oh, by the way, the Masters is going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Indianapolis 500 all that weekend.
Every single sporting event will be held on July 4th.
Yes, and the Final Four. The Final Four is going to be going, too. Yes, the
World
Four.
Cup. Let's just throw everything in there.
And WrestleMania. WrestleMania is going to go at 2 a.m., right? They're gonna, it's literally like it's 48 hours of championship sports entertainment going wall-to-wall.
You'd listen, be upset, though, Seren, because of the 4th yeah, of July normally being dedicated to the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. So where would that fit into the grand scheme of things? It can't be 4th of July weekend.
You would leave it off.
I mean, that is true. It is the greatest spectacle of sports. It is the greatest test of human endurance, of raw consumption.
The elasticity of the human digestive system.
There is no equal. It is the greatest sporting event on earth, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Yeah, I mean, the good news is it will lose some luster without the spectators there, but you can socially distance people stuffing their face with hot dogs. You know, we can just spread them out on the stage. Maybe yep, we don't have as many contestants. But, yeah, we're going to need that, yeah, the 4th of July. Baseball might have to take a back seat. Opening day can be after the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. That'll kick the day off.
Yeah. I'm down with
that. I'm good.
Best pregame show ever.
I love the hot dog eating contest. You know, people think I'm joking. I'm not. It's absolutely fantastic.
Trust me, folks. Having seen it firsthand.
Well, doesn't it?
That's
like
a family affair in the Petro family.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is. The kids.
I think the girls like it more
excited
than you do.
they're brainwashed into it because I've made it such a major event that they actually think, you know, being impressionable young people, that's great. And you know what else does it for the kids, why they love it so much? Hmm. It's because they love, while I'm watching it, while I'm relishing in it so much, that their mother is going constantly, I mean, this is just disgusting. This is, I mean,
say,
oh, my God.
Not the entire family.
Yeah. Oh, no. Mom. Yeah. My wife, no interest in it. And that drives the girls to like it even more. Wait a minute. Dad loves it. Mom's disgusted. We're on team love it. Like, this is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. I do like that my 10-year-old just all out, like, cheers for whoever we're rooting for. right? She's totally into it, like a pure fan. And meanwhile, my 13-year-old just has like a like a wry smile on her face, like the cat that just ate the canary. Like, it's a guilty pleasure. It's a guilty pleasure for her. Yep. She's somewhere between her father and her mother, more towards her dad. Meanwhile, my little one is just, you know, she's might be past me on the sheer joy of it all. But yeah, it's a piece of Americana. And listen, isn't it a sport right now that we should all be cherishing? I mean, it really does. You know, is it healthy? No. Right? Is it good for your body? No. But there's plenty of people in this country right now that aren't making those decisions the same, or are making their decisions the same way, right?
Sure. I'm with them.
See
with
the Ozarks.
Yes.
See the Ozarks this weekend.
Yeah. You know? Which I heard someone say.
Nope.
Would that be fun even if there was no virus?
Oh, if you were young, it probably would be.
I was young. I don't think I ever longed for that.
Although I am, like, the pools in Vegas when we're out there for the fantasy football weekend are about as full as I can handle them. Like, that little pool shot I saw of one of the bars down there, like, the ratio cannot be 2-to-1 people to water.
Right. That's what I'm
right. That's not referring to. That's not a good time in a pool.
No.
Right? You need, like, for me, like, 5-6. Maybe if I really did the math, like a 10-to-1 water to people ratio. But when you've got more humane, like, I think that pool was like 12 inches deep. Just by the time everybody got in it, it raised the water level up to like waist deep.
Imagine if you were at a your favorite bar and there's a lot of people there, and you're there with your boys or whatever, you know. Women.
What do you mean? What do you mean your boys?
I mean,
wait a minute, what do you mean your boys?
Like your friends, your pals. If you're out there and you got some of your mates there with you, and men and women too, and you're all kind of crowded, imagine that. Now imagine someone saying, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to close the doors and we're going to fill this thing up to your waist in water. Is it good? You're going to go, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But why would you want to be in that situation? To me, that's what that looks like. Your favorite bar just got flooded.
The pool just no longer looks cool and refreshing on a hot day.
No.
It looks warm and pee, you know?
And everything else, just ick.
The guy who's drank 3 pitchers of beer and hasn't gone to the bathroom yet, let me tell you what's going on there. Like, he's not super bladder, okay?
No.
You're standing in the first 2 pitchers of beer, man. So let's be clear about what's happening in that. No, I'm not down with the packed bar in the pool look. No.
Nopers.
I'd pass. Even without, a deadly pandemic going on at the time. Yeah, no, just maybe when you're young, that looks appealing, but no, I'm going to pass. All right, did you watch Lance Armstrong? Did you watch the Lance Armstrong documentary?
I did not.
Okay, Jed?
I did not either.
Yeah, and just to fill people in, I did actually already know that answer, right? We do meet about these things and talk about it, but I thought it was interesting to just lay that out there. And I think, you know, a lot of people are on your side, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Bruce Lee documentary and the Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa documentary. Like, what is it about, like, why now? One thing that contributed to it was like a Saturday night, not a Sunday night. It wasn't all right, gear down, let's get ready for work. I'm sure there's a lot of people, whether it was just, you know, you and a spouse or a couple of friends socially distanced outside, or just a mob scene down at the lake, whatever you chose to do, whatever level of responsibility you chose to exhibit. It was a drinking night, for lack of a better term. You didn't have to go to work the next day. So that definitely takes away from it. But, you know, and, it's basketball versus cycling. Okay. But were you watching The Last Dance for the basketball shots? Because that wasn't really what it was about. Like, oh, let's see the Bulls run this play. Let's see if they win this game. It wasn't about the basketball, right? It was about the story, I think. Although I do think the backdrop of the story matters, and people are more into basketball than they are cycling, for sure. But, like, the Lance Armstrong, like, why are you taking drugs and – when did you take drugs? And, you know, they did a pretty good job of previewing it. Like, were you, was it hard to go back to doping after you had cancer? And he goes, no. Like, I wanted to hear the rest of that. I wanted to hear how a guy had, I wanted to hear, you know, I'd never seen the timeline laid out. Like, did he, was he doping, and what is doping, and how many other things was he doing, and was he doing that before the cancer? Did he do it before and after? I'd been under the assumption that he did it before and after. So, you know, what was that a difficult thing? And, you know, I was really intrigued by that, and I did follow Lance. Did you guys watch Lance Armstrong? Did you watch any of the Tour de France's when he was winning?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Always.
Jed?
Not really. I mean, I would see the stages on SportsCenter and whatnot, but just to watch the cycling, no, I didn't really ever pay too much attention.
See, I did. I watch it now even because it's one of the great sporting events in the world, and so I still watch it even with guys that now, for me, basically are nameless, faceless, whatevers. Just the concept of racing 150 miles and getting up and racing 170 miles in mountains and all that, I marvel at it. I think it's an incredible spectacle. It's a beautiful backdrop for sports, the mountains and even just the old French towns, even when they're not in the mountains. It's an incredible backdrop to look at and watch. And it's usually you're watching the replay late at night, and so it's a good time when I'm, you know, winding down to just take in the spectacle of it. So, but when Lance Armstrong was competing, man, I was there. I was there every night. Couldn't wait to see where is Lance. Is he? Oh, he's 2 minutes back. Is he? When's he going to make his move? And what's going on? I was on the edge of my seat. So if you weren't into it when he was going, I get not being into it at all. It's just like cycling just wasn't your flavor. But Curtis, I'm a little surprised, you know, because you said, yeah, you did watch when Lance was winning. And what I was struck by, and I know we've had a little fun here, and so we need to take a break, and we'll get more into this. But what I was struck by was, if you watch this, it'd be very easy to conclude that Lance Armstrong sat and watched The Last Dance, and then they did all these interviews this past week, and he did everything he could to mimic Michael Jordan.
Really?
The way in which he, you know, talked about wanting to crush somebody after his cancer. I think he said there were 30 race teams that were out there. The U.S. Postal Service was the only one that offered him a contract. And he said, so there were 29 teams that I was going to crush.
A little Brady, you know, there too, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was an element of, okay, you don't think I'm good enough? You don't think I can do this?
That's how you're going to play it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And he even at one point says, and this is one where I think it absolutely, and who knows, maybe he heard these things about Michael Jordan, and he was, you know, just trying to position himself like, see, I'm just like Michael Jordan. I don't know, but I would tend to not think so, because he does seem to be such a self-absorbed individual that I don't know that he would have the time to even check in on what's Michael Jordan like. Right. I don't even think that was there. And I know from talking to people, I know when he used to be, his Livestrong charity was the major benefactor of the American Century Championships in Tahoe. And, you know, he would be out there and he'd come in and be like, oh, you think we can get a chance, or you know, he's going to do a quick press conference here, and he'd be late to that. And, you know, I'd kind of see some people be like, well, you know, Lance Armstrong, and they kind of roll their eyes like, oh, geez, like, here's a pain in the ass. Right. Mm-hmm. But at that time, he was the guy that started this, what, multi-billion dollar charitable foundation that was this runaway machine doing so much good. And they detail in this how the Livestrong Foundation got started. And, you know, it just started with his cancer, and it built up, and how it just took off. Like, it just, they were blown away at how fast it took off and how fast they had to try to adapt and move with it to keep it going. And that element of it, like, he was at the centerpiece of an American charitable movement, an American fight against a disease in cancer. And he was at the eye of the storm of that. And then for it all to be completely gone. And, you know, to be, you know, the show opens, by the way, if you watch the unedited one, I would say 8 of the first 30 words are the F word, you know, in the documentary. I mean, it comes out firing. He tells a story about how, he thought everybody was going to be blank you, Lance. And then they weren't. And then he goes, then I see this. Then one day after about 5 years, he comes out and he's getting into an Uber, and a guy at a cafe, you know, recognizes him and goes, blank you. And then all the guy's friends stands up and they're all yelling, blank you. And that's how it takes off and starts. And his reaction to it, and you know, that's where the documentary goes from there. But I was struck by just how competitive the guy is, And I'm curious, this is the question I'll have you chew on, and then we'll tackle when we come back. And listen, I will openly ask, just because I've seen it everywhere in professional sports, it's so prevalent, like how LeBron James is playing at such a high level at age 36. I mean, I openly will wonder, is there some kind of performance-enhancing drug there? But basketball seems to be the sport, unless it's to maintain to and play at a high level to an age well beyond anybody has. We saw Barry Bonds do that, and I am not going to be shocked at all, not shocked at all, if one day we find out LeBron James was on some kind of PEDs, and that's how at 36 he's still playing like he's 26. But for the most part, basketball seems immune to the performance-enhancing drug world. Had it been something that you could help out, had the entire sport been taking PEDs, would Michael Jordan have taken PEDs? Think about that question. We'll talk about it when we come back here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
You look in your eyes and you see the back of their head. You know, it's a real glaring look, and they're like this, you know, a little bit nervous.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. I find it interesting that we continue to watch the Baseball Writers Association of America vote no on Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, although I think they're both past 50%, but not getting enough to get into the Hall of Fame. I think it's ridiculous. An industry that did not, they broke no rules of the industry, yet somehow people who weren't good enough to play the game are going to keep them out by not voting them in. I've always thought that was foolish from day one. More and more people, I think, are coming around as the wounds, the salt in the wounds, of having people who be enhanced through performance enhancing drugs, you know, it seems to have been softened because time heals all wounds, and also it just happens more and more. It's more and more commonplace. It's still out there. We still hear about it in sports, and I think also then we look and we start to put it into perspective, and we find it a little bit more foolish. I bring that up here as an addendum to the Lance Armstrong documentary, which I thought was good. You know, we'll see what part two looks like before we throw any grades around. I don't know that we'll spend as much time on it as we did with the – in fact, we won't. I'm quite confident we'll not spend as much time on it because I don't think as many people are watching, not nearly as many people. But I do think there's some things that are interesting talking points, even if you didn't see the documentary, and that is this. You know, the documentary does a pretty good job, although I'd love to know – but a pretty good job of pointing out that kind of that's what you do in that sports. In the sport of cycling, blood doping was reality. There had been a major scandal in the year that the last year that before Lance Armstrong rode in the Tour de France, and they had a bunch of people that were kicked out and their results were out. But it was going on. It was completely widespread. And I don't know how you could watch cycling now. Maybe someone who follows the sport year-round is more in tune. And, well, no, the testing's great, and so none of them are doing it. I always assume that the beating the test is way ahead of the actual testing. And so it's an ebb and flow, and there may be times that the testing's pretty well caught up, but the next new thing is coming. And Lance Armstrong pretty much details that throughout in this, like, well, what they started with, you know, and how they were doing things and what changed and how they were moving on. And they've got all of his teammates, you know, that cycled with him, and they all were doing it. It appears as though the entire sport was taking those drugs. So I would ask you, it struck me how much Lance Armstrong seems to be very similar to Michael Jordan and the creating, you know, villains that he was going to conquer, and his competitive nature and his want to not only win but to win big and to crush people along the way. That struck me as Jordan-esque. If Michael Jordan was a cyclist, or if, you know, there was a performance-enhancing drug that had taken over the NBA the way it took over cycling, do you think Michael Jordan would have taken it?
My first thought was a reactionary yes, because he, okay, as I said, is the ultimate competitor and would do anything he could to be the best. There is a part of me, the part where I'm not 100% sure, is just the levels and the layers to which Michael Jordan's competitiveness has, would he have considered that to be the challenge? Like, my ultimate challenge isn't just winning. It's going to be, I'm going to win by not doing it. You know, he also is the one guy I could see having that be his ultimate motivation. My first inclination, though, is that I think he would.
If the difference between taking it and not taking it would have meant one scoring title for Jordan not taking it, and the, what did he have, 7, 10,
yeah,
something like that, 10
yeah,
scoring titles by taking it, if he'd have quickly realized, I can't do it without. If it had meant one championship versus six or zero versus six, would he have taken it?
I think he would have spent one season trying to beat that. But at some point, if he couldn't, I think he would have. Does that make sense?
You know what my answer is? And it's the reason why it's one of the next documentaries that I want to see. The answer of what Michael Jordan would have done, to me, is Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds is that test played out. Barry Bonds was widely considered the best player in baseball. He was a 30-30 guy and then a 40-40 guy. I think it was during that 40-40 season that he maybe started taking the steroids, if I can remember my timeline, but it was around that. But he was already 30-30 and had won, what, three MVPs before that. So he was the best player in baseball. But then when the industry found the steroids and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa blew his doors off, and even though he was still putting up MVP numbers, all the focus and attention and adulation went to Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, and he couldn't be the best anymore, he started taking steroids. By all accounts, Barry Bonds got to the steroid table after Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if Barry Bonds is mentioned in that McGwire and Sosa documentary that's coming in a couple of weeks. But to me, we've already seen what would Jordan have done played out, and it was in Barry Bonds.
Yeah, and he'd already had the 40-40 at that point, but when you look at his numbers leading up
I think the 40-40, I'd have to go back and get the Balco book out, the Game of Shadows book out, but I want to say that the didn't he start the steroids that year in the 40-40 year?
It could have been. My thought was that the it came 2 years before McGwire Sosa blew past 60.
Then you're probably right.
The 40-40.
His
numbers, Mickey, 40 in 150, 40, 37, 34, 49 in 2000, and then boom. That's the next 4 years. It's that 01 through 04 that you see just the ridiculous 73, and he basically has black ink. He led the majors in all the slash categories and put up numbers not seen since Ruth. That did come in a timeline that would suggest that was a response to McGwire and Sosa. Absolutely.
I think it's interesting, you know, we quickly in The Last Dance gravitated towards, you know, Michael Jordan being a jerk. And the most compelling part, in my opinion, most people's opinion, I think, of The Last Dance was the end of episode 7 where he attacks that. And he turns it into, well, him being a jerk was him playing to win. Right.
Yeah.
Where you could say that, you know, calling himself, you know, Black Jesus or God gave you that ticket. I mean, he doesn't seem to register. That doesn't seem to register with him as the jerkness. The jerkness is just his, what he perceived as driving people. But people got to what kind of person is Michael Jordan? And quickly on the Lance Armstrong one, people are talking about it. And he does seem to be, Lance is all about Lance. And Lance has all the answers. There's even this one scene where he's getting to go receive an award. And I can't tell from, I think it's a breast cancer award that he was getting from breast cancer survivors or for the prevention of breast cancer. And it's after he's, you know, fallen from grace, they actually gave him an award. And he gets in the car and he gets in the back seat. And they're like, hey, put your seatbelt on. He's like, you don't have to put your seatbelt on in the back seat. And then he argues with this guy about seatbelts. You know, like, yeah, you should put one on. And whether there is or isn't a law, just put the seatbelt on. The guy's like, if there's a seatbelt there, you're supposed to wear it. And just like the he's going to argue the point, and I'm Lance, and I can get away with it because I'm Lance Armstrong. He's still there. But I'm amazed at how people gravitate to whether the guy is or is not a jerk. I think that's true of both of them, and I think they both have jerk qualities. I would tend to put Lance further down the line of jerkdom, if you will. But I will say this, the whole interpretation was we didn't care that he was a jerk. He was always a jerk back then. And nobody cared when he was winning.
Yeah.
When he was winning and the fable of it being pure, that was all fine. And Lance was the best. He was voted 4 times Sportsman of the Year, AP Male Athlete of the Year. He was winning every award in a non-traditional sport. He was winning them all. And people couldn't wait to throw their arm around him. And like I said, the Live Strong Foundation, people not only supported Lance Armstrong as far as rooting for him, voting for him on different awards, but they monetarily, now yes, it went for cancer, but they gave to his cancer charity in Live Strong. People voted him. Nobody cared about the jerkdom when he was winning. Right? And right. I think it's amazing our view how quickly now Lance Armstrong is like the biggest loser ever, and he cheated. Did he cheat if the entire industry is doing it? Right? Did Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens cheat if more than half of baseball was taking performance-enhancing drugs? And do you really think the most competitive guy on earth, as Michael Jordan has been labeled, if he were in a sport? Like, had he continued to play baseball, what year was he playing baseball?
Oh, you know, that would have been 94?
Right, 94. The
and then 90, into 95?
Yeah, 94 season.
Yeah.
And then was going to play in 95, and then they had the lockout. And, you know, had he continued, that's right in the wheelhouse of when the steroids got it going. Do you think Michael Jordan would have been taking steroids to eventually make it in baseball? Maybe not, because he was already widely accepted. Like, he didn't have to be a great baseball player because he's already the best basketball player by a lot of people's minds, one of the best that ever lived, if not the best already at that point. So maybe he wouldn't have been as driven because of what he had in basketball. But if you think for 1 second, any one of our super competitive winners, any of the great winners, wouldn't have barreled right there, wouldn't have been right next to Lance Armstrong in their sport, taking whatever it took to be a winner, I think you're kidding yourself. I mean, the kind of champions that we love to celebrate are not well-balanced people.
Right.
And certainly when you're in your 20s, you don't know the value of being 40-something and seeing your kids and seeing that, you know, experiencing the greatness of the moments that come with the successes of your children and saying, you know what, I would never want to risk a heart attack or cancer or anything that could come from doing these things, you know, to get ahead in sports, because I wouldn't have these incredible moments, and these moments mean more to me than what I thought was the best ever out on the field. When you're 20-something, you don't have those. Right, those moments are not there. You hear all the NFL players, if I'd have known what it was going to do to my body, Neil Smith said it to me, if I'd have known what it was going to do to my body, would I have played football? No. Now, some of them say yes, but some of them say no. Right? But that perspective is not carried with you onto the playing field at age 25 years old. Mm-mm. And so what we absolutely crush Lance Armstrong for, to me, he's no different than Michael Jordan. He just had the opportunity. And the opportunity wasn't there in basketball. There isn't a drug that makes you 4 inches taller or gives you 4 inches more on your vert. Maybe a little bit more. But one of the biggest things steroids does is strength, recovery, the ability to work out more and add more to it. I don't know. I find it amazing. I just love the... We will celebrate the crap out of somebody, and then we, you know, immediately, even if we would do the same thing, others would do the same thing, we immediately dump that star.
And I think there's one of the layers with the hatred, if we can use that word, of the fans have and the people in this country for Armstrong, or at least the dislike, is the fact that he said he didn't do it and then used like kind of his family, you know, how can you say this thing? It hurts my family. And then he went back and said, I did it. I think there's a betrayal factor that adds to the level of
I would say it's the arrogance of him to like the different ways he said no, but still, it wasn't like if he had just come right out and admit it, we were all still going to be behind him.
Yeah, but
bull crap.
But if he was still winning when he said that, I think there'd be a many more people would have looked past it. The fact that he wasn't, that he did something that they could easily stand in front of and say this is wrong, the fact that he was losing makes that a lot more convenient than if he's winning. It's easy to dump on someone who's lost, but people will find reasons to overlook the issues on someone when he's winning. So we'll never know what that would have been, because he wasn't winning at the time. But I suspect that people would have been, even once he was unmasked, people would have been a lot more forgiving of him had he still been winning, and bringing glory to this country. And that's part of that. That's a lot of it. Is people watch that because they watched the Tour de France because an American was winning. People probably didn't watch much of the Tour de France in years when, you know, in between Greg LeMond's great run and Armstrong, they probably didn't watch much. Oh, there's an American who's winning. I think I'll watch the Tour de France now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's what we talk about. We have someone to root for.
Yep.
Right? I was excited for the match today in Bundesliga when, you know, 4 weeks ago I couldn't have given a flying crap because I picked a team to root for. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a rooting interest. Right, that's one of the biggest things there. One of the reactions I got from a friend, he said, what struck me about Lance was how big of a narcissistic a-hole he was at such a young age, even before he was famous.
A prodigy.
He was a prodigal a-hole.
The boy has the gift.
Yes, he has the gift. He is not just an a-hole, he's king of the a-holes. We will take a break, come back. I want to get into the match, 913-3-810-810. Of course, that was the golf match that happened on Sunday, coming up next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I like pancakes. I like pancakes. I am happy. I am happy. La, 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 la.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Nate Taylor going to be with us in our next hour. We'll talk some about Chiefs football. We'll talk about Chiefs being the favorite. Maybe get into the 4th and 15 rule. How, you know, what kind of benefit is that for the Chiefs? I definitely think it benefits the Chiefs. It's just it only benefits at like 0.5%. Right, because you got to be trailing, but we'll talk about that a little bit with Nate Taylor. Some other NFL news we'll discuss with him. The match was had. Did you watch the match? You did not watch Lance. Did you watch Peyton and Tiger Woods against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady?
I did.
Yeah, very nice. All of it?
Every bit of it.
Really?
Yes, it was entertaining to me. The mic'd up thing. I would flip over to something else and go back, but I was there at the beginning. I was there at the end.
Okay, Jed, you no doubt watched it. You love golf.
Yes, I did watch it. I don't know if I watched every second, like Curtis, who's apparently now our golf insider, but I did watch like 90%
anything
of it, probably.
But.
I did love the mic'd up, and what blew me away is one, and just how great, like, the pros are.
Yes,
like just. Unreal, the shots that they could hit. Phil Mickelson, I thought, was the breakout star, if anybody. We knew Peyton Manning was funny and witty. We knew he was wittier than Tom Brady. That's true, right? Nobody came away thinking any less, did you?
Nah, no. He maybe had a little bit more personality than I thought, but it was, the bar was so low.
Yeah. But I think we all felt like Peyton Manning could make a hell of a broadcaster, and I think that was shown that I think he absolutely can be the equal to Tony Romo and maybe better, and ESPN should just give him whatever he wants to be on Monday Night Football because I think he would be fantastic. He's got a great dry sense of humor, and we know he knows the game. And if you watch their what do they call those little vignettes they have where somebody goes and breaks things down? Whatever the hell they are.
I know what
anyway,
you're about.
Yeah, Peyton Manning does them. Kobe Bryant did them in basketball for him. Anyway, and Phil Jackson was doing some of them around the Last Dance. The details, yeah, detail or whatever.
Yeah.
But Peyton Manning can clearly do the analysis part, and the wit and humor. He would be great. I heard somebody say, some jackass say, Peyton Manning's afraid of Tony Romo. That's why he's not doing it.
What?
Really? Like, we now have to, announcers now have to be afraid. We have to challenge the manhood of announcers into doing a job. Like, spare me, jackass. Peyton Manning would be great, but we've always known he'd be great. I think, at least I have. You know what jumped out at me? I think Phil Mickelson might be the Tony Romo of golf announcers whenever he hangs it up.
Well, his ability to not only analyze, but kind of put it out to where you can understand what it was. Yes. There were some moments, especially like before his shots, where you're like, oh, wow, that was really good. And then he goes out and does exactly what he was talking about. Yeah, that was really good.
There was one where he was – Tom Brady was over. Maybe Justin Thomas, I think, maybe came over and said, so what are you thinking here? And he broke down how – see how it's darker green here and then it's lighter green up here on the darker green? That's where the cut of the grass, it's growing towards me. So normally I'd want to get the ball up over that because that's going to deaden the ball. So I want to get it clear up onto the green. But we've got wet conditions – so I can use that cut, and it's going to kind of skid across there, but it'll deaden it enough that I can just get it up there and get the roll up to the hole. And I was like, good Lord.
And
I,
the mean, way I'm he...
like, I was following what he was saying.
Exactly.
And then he went out, and he put the ball exactly where he was talking about like, putting it and rolled it to like a foot of the hole. I was like, holy crap. Just one, how good he was to be able to do exactly what he wanted to do. And Tiger Woods, to a lesser extent, I mean, you know, could go out and play things and articulate some things. And I thought it was interesting how he's giving Peyton Manning, you know, okay, you want to shoot for this tree right over here, and it's going to roll back here, be aggressive. And, you know, I found all of that really entertaining, them telling the amateurs how to play. Yeah. But I thought if there was a breakout star, it was Phil Mickelson as a future golf analyst, because I don't hear anyone, and maybe it's because you don't have a true, like, one-color man. You're always bouncing around at different spots. And it's he's got this shot or that shot. If there's anything golf, anybody watching that does golf broadcasts might want to consider, that's actually having the detail kind of guy break down the different golf shots, because I found that to be entertaining as a casual golf fan who watches only the majors. That drew me into this competition.
There was another moment where I don't know how you do this as an analyst, because you have to be on the course like he was maybe, but how he set up Tom Brady for this putt and says, here's – the angle is going to be here because of this, and here's where you need to hit it. If you go up here, it's not going to do it. You need to hit it right here. And then Brady put it right where it needed to be, and he almost went. It was within a foot of the hole, I think. And I was like, holy crap. How do you – I mean, that's probably not uncommon knowledge from professional golfers, but he put it out there in a way that you can understand it. And that's one of the toughest – that's one of the reasons why John Madden became a huge star, because he took complex – things and broke them down to where you could understand it. Phil Mickelson could do that.
Yeah, I thought Phil Mickelson was absolutely fantastic.
Justin Thomas might have a future in it when he quits playing golf.
Yes. Yeah, Justin Thomas was really good as well. So I thought, you know, at a time where craving competition on a Sunday afternoon where I may have been up too late having too many Coronas or watching Breaking Bad the night before, it was nice to just veg and take in that golf competition. It was really good. Really good stuff. We'll take a break. Nate Taylor bringing in some really good stuff. He always does. It's Nate Taylor from The Athletic next here on the program.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, two quarterbacks in the 1970s started at least 10 games in a season without a win. Name either one. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.